on sponsorship, carrying the message, an OA workshop held March 26, 2016 in Culver City, California, hosted by the OA Los Angeles Intergroup. Part 1 is a panel discussion by longtime fellows Nancy D., Ray D., and Helen T. They were led by moderator Dara B. Part 2 is the question and answer period that followed the panel presentation. And now for part 1 of On Sponsorship, Carrying the Message.
Experience strength and hope. Sponsors continually renew and reaffirm their own recovery. Sponsors share their program up to the level of their own experience. Ours is the program of attraction. Find a sponsor who has what you want and ask that person how he or she is achieving it. A member may work with more than one sponsor and may change sponsors at will. Now, having said that, I would like to introduce our speakers today. Thank you guys so much, Ray, Nancy D., and Helen. And could you join me in welcoming them, please? And format is very straightforward. You, in 20 minutes, talk about your experience being sponsored, sponsoring, anything else that you want to say that's pertinent. So I think, Nancy, you were going to begin?
Certainly.
Nancy volunteered. Yeah. And how would you like your time?
Ten. Yep. My name is Nancy D. I'm a compulsive overeater. That's no surprise.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Sponsorship, that's an interesting topic. And I came in quite a while ago, been in for a while. And you guys were talking in the fellowship of the meetings, and were talking out loud about words I understood, but I didn't know what you meant by those words. I mean, I certainly heard the word sponsor, but I didn't know what you meant by that. But I got that you were supposed to ask, find somebody who had what you want. That's how it was said in those days. I don't know that they still say it quite that way, but find somebody who has what you want and ask them how they got it and if they'll help you. And so it meant that I was supposed to ask somebody to help me, which was, I thought before I came into program that I was supposed to do everything myself. That's kind of how I was raised in life, that I was supposed to take care of the things I had to take care of, and it was my responsibility. So the idea of asking somebody for help rather formally was not an easy concept for me. And I was afraid of it. And so while I understood that I was supposed to do it, if I saw somebody that had what I wanted, I just didn't know how to get the words out. And so somebody suggested to me pretty early on that I might write it down. I might write down literally, or write on a piece of paper, will you be my sponsor? And if I saw somebody who had what I wanted, I might hand them that piece of paper, which was a great help for me because it like took the pressure off. And so I wrote a little piece of paper. I had a little notebook in my purse. Will you be my sponsor? And I had it ready. And so then I was like watching to see somebody who had what I wanted. And one day, I saw somebody who had what I wanted. I got very excited, and I rushed up to her and asked her to be my sponsor. I forgot to get the paper out. But I had the paper, and the suggestion from the fellow member that had given me that idea, calm me down, let me find a way that I might manage that. Because, again, I understood the word sponsor, and I understood I was supposed to ask somebody, but the fear was getting in the way. And so having that little piece of paper that I didn't whip out in time, I actually asked first, and she said yes. And so that's how it started. And when because I've been in for a while, I still don't have the same sponsor that I almost handed that paper to many years ago. She's went to school, became an attorney, moved to Texas. She's practicing an attorney over there. So but when I say my sponsor, I don't necessarily mean one person. It's a series of people who have played that helpful role in my life this whole time. And that first sponsor, one of the things I got from her was she felt and convinced me, A, she said, keep coming back, that was essential. If I couldn't do anything else, I could keep coming back. And that gave me hope because as scared as I might be, I could at least go to a meeting, even if I was afraid. And so I kept coming back. And she said, she convinced me that what I did, that I couldn't do this wrong, that it became my program. And the very first thing she asked me to do, and I was afraid of, actually when I think about it now, I was afraid of everything. But I didn't know that. But the very first thing she asked me to do was the dreaded 30 and 30. Mm-hmm. And by 30 and 30, that means 30 meetings in 30 days. And we live in LA, so that's not logistically a problem, but practically, to go to, I was terrified of that idea for a number of reasons, like, for example, so far my membership in the fellowship was a secret because I'd done so many things before and had been unsuccessful. I didn't want to tell my family or anybody one more time that I was getting ready to, starting Monday, I was going to do blah, 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 because my history was that I didn't follow through. And so, but I had, because I had a child and I needed, you know, childcare and all that, and I was going to be out every evening at a meeting, it couldn't be a secret anymore. So I had to come out and say, I'm in Overeaters Anonymous and, you know, could you watch the baby tonight? So, but I did do the 30 and 30 because she had what I wanted, and that's what she asked me to do. And if I pointed to, if I were today to point to something that really made a difference for me in program, it was that 30 and 30. Because it's how I learned, it's how I found my program. It's how I found my people. It's how I found the rooms that I was comfortable in. It's how I began hearing. Like, I remember I sat next to somebody in a meeting. I found meetings that I liked, and I started returning to those same meetings. And some of them became my home meetings. And I used to sit in a particular row. You know how you choose your seat, you choose your row. So I was in this row, in this seat, and I sat next to somebody whose seat that they'd chosen was next to mine. And he would say the steps out loud. When somebody was reading them, he'd say them right along with them. And I thought he was showing off. But I was wrong. He'd just been in the room so long. I didn't try to learn the steps by memory. Just, you're in the rooms every day. You hear the steps every day. After a while, you know them. Okay. So that was the first thing she asked me to do, was a 30 and 30. I start going to 30. She also suggested that every meeting I go to, that I take down at least 3 phone numbers. She said, you don't have to make any phone calls yet. She said, but take the numbers down now, so if you need to use the phone, you'll have the number. And make a little bitty note, she suggested, of where you saw them, maybe what they look like. You know, red hair, Sunday morning. So when you were calling, you knew who it was you were calling. And so I did those things. So, and she said, if somebody says something that resonates with you, make a note, write it down. Particularly if they call out a page number in the big book, which I'm a big fan of. If you found something in the big book that you liked, or any piece of literature and you liked it, say the page number so somebody else can go back and look it up. And that's what I did. And I heard somebody, and the page has changed, I understand that. But at the point, it was, you know, people would say 449, and I wanted to know what that was all about. And that's the page on acceptance in the big book. And so her suggestion of 30 and 30 is how I began to settle into the rooms, how I began to not feel so nervous, not so uncomfortable, not so strange. You were reading things with numbers, and right off the bat, I didn't get that there were 12 steps and 12 traditions. I just did lots of things with numbers. And in that 30 and 30, it happened that in 5 days in a row, I was asked to read steps. It just happened that way. And that made me a little bit more familiar with that piece of paper and those steps. Okay, so as far as my like daily spiritual program, the sponsor's suggestion, same sponsor, was that I begin to write down that I have a practice in the morning, that I read a piece of program-approved literature in the morning, that I say a prayer, that I do a meditation, do find what's comfortable for me, but have a morning practice that I do every day and call her. And I had certain days that I would call her, and I did. And that's how that first sponsor and I connected. And we began working the steps, and life started to change. And when I came in the rooms, I came in about maybe 323. I don't know exactly what I weighed because I didn't weigh often at all. But things started to change. My body started to change. I started feeling comfortable in the rooms. And after a time, oh my gosh, she suggested I begin to sponsor. And that was after we'd gotten through the fifth step. And I was scared, and I didn't know what the heck to do. But I also believed in service. She said I should have 2 service commitments at all times, which meant that I'm at least going to 2 meetings. After the 30 and 30, that I would at least be going to 2 meetings a week. And I did that. And I started to sponsor, didn't know what to say, and at first it was a really scary proposition. It really was. I literally didn't know what to say. But good gosh, somebody asked me to help them, and I took the phone call and, you know, began to stumble through. Over the years, I've learned lots of things to do and lots of things to not do with sponsors. and for me, it's based on sponsors and sponsees. For me, it's based on my own experience. Like, I know without a doubt that that 30 and 30 made a difference for me, and so the people that I sponsor have all shared in that experience and have all done 30 and 30 to begin working with me, because I know that it works. And I'm a big fan of the big book. I'm not a thumper, but I'm a big fan of the big book. And for me, that's where the program is. The steps are in there, the program is in there. When I don't know what to do, sometimes, and I've done this often, when I don't know what to do in a situation, and I talk to God about it, and I literally just don't know what to do, sometimes I'll just open the big book at random and do what I call big book dare. And I just kind of dare the page to have an answer for me. And you know what? Every single time it does. It's a phenomenon. I don't understand why, but that book helps me. It just helps me. And so I get my sponsors to read. The steps are laid out in the big book. They're also laid out in the AA 12 and 12. They're also in the OA 12 and 12. And so that's the process that I have. That's what I have asked them to do. But in the beginning, I didn't know to do that. And what I've learned on iSponsor, I personally am full right now, and I had to learn how many people I could help and help well without hurting myself. And that was a journey for me. I had to learn that, figure that out. And I also, in the beginning, I didn't realize how unavailable I was during the day. That I'm, you know, coming and going, working, you know, miscellaneous. That often I wasn't available. But that what I did learn was that I am available without exception first thing in the morning. So if you can call me first thing in the morning, you're going to get me live. If it's later than that, then it's catch as catch can, and now they know that, and I know that. And in the beginning, when I didn't know that, I ended up feeling bad a lot because I'd missed a call and I was unavailable yet again. Now I know to say that, call me crack of dawn, you know, from here to here, you're going to get me. After that, it's catch as catch can, and we work with that. Okay. So I had to learn how to begin to work to be a sponsor. And for me, one of the best ways to learn how to be a sponsor is to be sponsored. And I keep a sponsor. I've always had a sponsor. At the moment, I have two sponsors. When I say sponsor, I'm, again, not always referring to the same one person, but I was telling my sponsor this week that I was nervous about coming here to talk about sponsorship. And she said something that I didn't necessarily want to hear, but it turned out to be the truth. And one of the things I appreciate from sponsors is they have a perspective on my stuff that I don't have. That I'm involved in the stuff, I'm concerned about the stuff, anxious about it, whatever about it. And when I'm talking to somebody I trust, she's got a different perspective. Oh, I mentioned there she's got a different perspective. I believe that women sponsor women, men sponsor men. That's how I was raised in terms, I don't mean raised, but I mean raised and programmed. And that's what I find that works. And she said that was ego involved. That if I was anxious about it, it was ego. And that it was me trying to be a perfectionist. And I was like, you know, rocks me back just a bit. But she was right. And the fact that I have someone that's close enough to me and my life and my thinking, my process, that she could say that and I could take it and learn from it, that's a gift. And it wasn't something that I wanted to hear, but it was the truth, and it helped me. And so that set me to God, talking to God about this, rather than worrying in my head what I should think about, say, do, be. I trust that it's going to be okay. My experience in program is that it is going to be okay, particularly if I talk to God, I bring God into it. So over the years, sponsors have said the most, I've gone through some tough stuff in program. Who hasn't? And but I've always had a sponsor there as a sounding board, and they say basic things to me like, where's God in this? I'm all anxious and worried about something. My sponsor says, where's God in this? Or another thing she often says to me is, give yourself a break, take it easy, lighten up. She's always telling me to lighten up. Mm-hmm. I get about things, I get anxious. She says, lighten up. She gives me like simple, basic, kind, always kind suggestions, lighten up. And the other thing she always wants me to do, oh my gosh, she's always suggesting that I write. You know those sponsors, I tell you, that's what they suggest. And so yesterday when I was all twisted up about this and feeling anxious, I thought to myself, what would I suggest to someone I sponsor if they were going to speak at a panel on sponsorship and they were feeling anxious? What would I suggest? I would suggest they talk to their sponsor. Okay, done that. I would suggest that they write. Oh, brother. So then I had to write yesterday. And I would suggest that they go to God, talk to God. I've been talking to God the whole time about this. Then I would suggest that she lighten up. So I did that whole process because of having learned through sponsorship and sponsoring that that's what works for me. And a lot of times, there's wisdom in there from exposure to the program for over all these years that I can't get to. I couldn't get directly to knowing that I should pray and write and lighten up without going through the thought of what would my sponsor say to me, what would I say to someone else I sponsor. That was an approach that I was able to use from being sponsored and sponsoring. And calm me down. Okay, am I in the last 10 now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so today, did I say how many I sponsor? Today I sponsor 5 people, and I recognize that I'm full, that I can't do, I can take somebody's phone call, but taking somebody else to the steps right now, I just know that that's the max for me. I've learned it. And I've also learned, one of the most valuable things I've learned is that if I don't have experience with something, I simply don't have experience. So I used to think when I was brand new as a sponsor, I used to think that I was responsible for a helpful suggestion no matter what was going on. I thought that, and I was wrong about that, because if I don't have experience with something, I simply don't have experience. Now, I suggest that somebody go to a meeting, raise their hand, tell the truth, and ask if there is anybody in the room that does have experience. That's what I can suggest. I can suggest writing, going to God. I can suggest a lot of things, but if I don't have experience with it, I simply don't have it. And one of the things, I was recovering from a catastrophic health thing some years ago, and people had lots of opinions about how I should manage through this recovery, this brain thing that happened to me. And I learned that I wasn't at all interested in your opinion about how to recover from brain surgery, because unless you'd had it, it was just opinion. And I apply that in general to my life, and specifically to sponsorship. I ask, if I don't have any experience and all I have is an opinion, I'll say, I've heard what you've said, I don't have any experience, are you interested in my opinion? And maybe they are, maybe they're not, but I don't want to hear opinion unless it's, you know, prefaced with that. But if it's experience, bring it on. That I want to hear about. But if you've learned through something, that I want to hear about. So sponsorship is great. It's connected with me to a beautiful group of women, my sponsors and sponsees over the years. And it's connected me to the fellowship in ways that I wouldn't have been connected without it at all. I can't say enough for sponsorship. It's a mainstay for me in my program. And thanks for listening.
Can I just have a 2-minute warning?
Yes, you can.
Hi, I'm Ray, compulsive overeater, bulimic anorexic.
Hi, Ray.
Hi. I'll see how long I can hold on to this microphone. Thanks so much for speaking, Lindsay. And Sarah, thanks for asking me. And thanks for everybody who showed up today. Really, like, congratulations. You know, it's taking action. It's taking action in our recovery. And so I prayed before I came here, because I don't plan what I'm going to say anymore. I used to carry note cards, you know. But I'm really trying to turn everything over to God. And so even speaking, and as an asset, I used to, like, I help people do this kind of thing. So it's like, you know, this is what you would think I would know how to do. But anyway, so sponsorship. So I'll have 28 years in May, and I came into New York. I didn't really know anything about this. This was my first program, and I thought I'd be in and out in 12 weeks. So, I, you know, 12 steps in 12 weeks, that's really what I wanted to do. I did do that because I found a sponsor. This was in the 80s in New York. I found a sponsor who was a female firefighter. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's who I want. Because to be a female firefighter in New York back in the 80s was virtually impossible. You had to be a badass, and I wanted a badass, you know. And I found her immediately, and I was like, dude, 12 steps in 12 weeks. She was like, let's do it. And she really kept me on task, you know, and it was great. Like, that was really, because, okay, so my, just a brief history, I come from extreme dieting. That's what I know. I'm really good at dieting. My first year in program, I stayed on a diet, but I have not been on a diet in 27 years. Okay, so that's amazing. That's a miracle. And she knew I was dieting. Didn't matter. She was just like, let's get rid of these steps, right? So, so I'm really good at following directions. That's what I do well. And so she really gave me direction. Like, this is what we're going to do. This is what you need to do today. And I was going to 6 meetings a week. And I was starting meditating again and all this kind of stuff. And she was great because she, you know, she was so strong. And then after 12 weeks, I was like, I need somebody else. Like, this is, I can't keep up this pace. Like, I really got it. And I found somebody who was gentler with me. And the truth is, I've changed sponsors so many times in this program that it, like, you know. And the sponsor I have now, I've had for a really long time. And the interesting thing about my sponsor, she's got over 30 years in program. And what's interesting about her is when I first met her, I couldn't stand her voice. You know, and really, like, it's like nails on a chalkboard to me. And then she's my sponsor, and I love hearing her voice. You know, so it's like my perception changed. My perception completely changed because I wasn't judging the quality of her voice. I was judging the quality of her words. And then her voice became beautiful to me. So, you know, new set of glasses. That's kind of what this program gives to me. Every time I have a sponsor speak with me, it's a new perspective. It's a new pair of glasses. And I'm now wearing contacts for the first time in my life. So that's interesting. So that's a whole new perspective as well. But what, you know, my sponsor, you know, let me go. I'm going to jump around. Okay, so there was this one sponsor I wanted when I moved out here. I really liked her program. She was a really strong program. And I was like, okay. So I called her and I said, so she said, well, this is what you need to do. You need to do 4 meetings a week. You need to call me every day. Blah, blah. And I was like, nope, not going to do it. So I didn't go with her because I couldn't do what she was asking of me. So I found somebody who could work the program the way I wanted to work it. And she was great because, you know, when I come from such extreme dieting and food control, my road had to get wider. Everybody says the road gets narrow. For me, it had to get wider. It was really behaviors that had to change for me. My sponsor does not eat sugar. She does not eat flour. She does not care that I eat those things. It matters not a whit to her. She just wants to know, am I working my program? Which is how I define my abstinence. If I'm working my program, I'm abstinent. That's what's worked for me to, you know, I'll have 28 years of abstinence, God willing, in May. So that's been working. So what she does for me, and I actually have two sponsors, but this is one I've had for a really long time, with the voice. what she does for me is she puts me right on set. She keeps right into solution. You know, if I'm having a problem, she's like, have you done a 10 step on this? Oh. Okay. I can say, no, you need to write it out. You're not going to say it to me. You're going to write it down, and then you're going to call me back. And then we'll see if you need to do a 6th and a 7th or an 8th and a 9th, whatever you need to do about it. But she really keeps me on track. And I had another sponsor prior to this one who I loved, who worked the program the way I did. She was open to everything, and then she went into another program, and I kind of flipped me out because it was a very restrictive program. But what was really great about her was she was so open to whatever I was doing. I remember I was eating potato chips. I'd never eaten potato chips like since I was like 3. Because they were a bad food, and all of a sudden I was like eating potato chips. And she said to me, are you enjoying them? Yeah. Okay. Fine. Keep eating them. when they no longer work for you, you know, ask God to remove them if they're really giving you trouble. And the next day they were gone. Like, and I eat potato chips, but not in a compulsive way. You know, they're just part of my essence. I want them, I have them, but no, I don't. She was so gentle with me. And that's what I needed. I needed a gentle sponsor. We all need different things. We all work the program differently. But I needed somebody who was going to go, no matter what, I was going to be okay. And she never judged me. And she was great. And when I turned over my fist up to her, oh my God, there was something on there that was so shameful to me. So incredibly shameful. And I remember talking to her about it and going, okay, okay, like this last thing, you know. And she's like, oh my God, I did that too. What? Like, to have the identification, that's what's so great for me, that my sponsor identifies. And when she can't identify, she says, you know what, I think you'd be really, it'd be really good if you called this person because they really understand what you're talking about and I don't have any experience in that area. Which is so helpful to me now, so that when I have a sponsee that I have no idea what's going on. You know, like I have son, I've been married, I've been with the same man, we've been married a long time, we've been together for 35 years. I don't know about dating, I never dated, you know? So I have a sponsee who has a lot of trouble dating. And I'm like, I don't have to tell you. Like, I don't have to tell you. So I need you to talk to single women or men who are having trouble with dating. That's, because I don't have an experience that I can help in that area. I wish I did, but I don't. And it's so, it takes the burden off of me. I don't have to be right. I don't have to come up with the right answer. All I have to do is share my experience, strength, and hope. I have a sponsee right now who chooses that. That was not my thing. I did not choose that. She's really having a hard time with it. And the interesting thing was, she's having trouble getting abstinent, and I know somebody who's been in program forever who's had trouble getting abstinent and got abstinent. She's a star. She's just an amazing woman. And I said to her, I really want you to call her. Turns out this woman shouldn't fit forever. So I was like, oh my God, like this is amazing. Because I keep wanting her to ask that person to sponsor her, you know, because I don't have experience, strength, and hope, and I have a feeling it's coming to the point where I'm just going to go, I can't help you. And the interesting thing about this, because I have let go of sponsees, and I think I'm sponsoring 7 or 8 people right now. Sometimes they call, sometimes they don't. You know, so I never really know who I'm sponsoring. But what I have learned, what a sponsor said to me, somebody who I really had trouble letting go of. And she said to me, is she getting better? And I said, no, she's not. She keeps relapsing. And she said to me, are you helping her? And I said, No, I'm not. And she said, why don't you help somebody who can't be helped? And let somebody else help her. And I was like, oh, that's what it is. It's not my ego. It's not how am I going to fix this person. It's, we're not a really good match. It's not about whether I'm right and you're wrong or you're right and I'm wrong. It's just, we're not helping one another. So let me work with somebody who actually can get some help from me. If I have a sponsee who's arguing with me, they're gone. I don't want to argue. You know, you want to fight with somebody, go call your mother. I don't want to do it. So unless you're like, you know, and you don't have to take every suggestion I say, but if you're going to fight me on everything, every step of the way, I'm not getting paid for this.
Yeah.
You know, this is about my recovery too. I don't want to fight. I don't want to spend time on the phone fighting. I don't want to hear about your problem. I have a sponsee who will leave 20-minute messages on my phone. She knows I hate this. I don't even listen to them. And I say to her, I'm not listening to your message. I'm not listening to it. I want to hear the problem for 1 minute, and then I'm going to let you know what step to go to, because that's how my sponsor, I'm not a therapist. I don't know how to handle somebody's psychological problems. I do know how to work the steps. I do know how to take somebody through the steps. I do know that if somebody's having resentment, they either need to do a fourth, if they haven't done that yet, and we'll talk about how to do like a fourth really quickly, or if they've gone through the steps, how to do a 10th step really quickly, so we can discuss it. I'm not there for outside help. That's not what I do. I'm there to share my experience, strength, and help. I know some of you are like, wow, she's badass hard, you know, and it's like, I'm actually a very nurturing sponsor. Like, I don't judge my sponsees at all. They can do whatever they want. I don't care how they work their program. I don't care how they define their abstinence, but I will not fight with them. I won't do it. Because, as my sponsor says, you're wasting time fighting when you could be helping somebody. That's wasted time for everybody. So, you know, I always feel bad when I let a sponsee go. I had to let speaking to the male-female thing, not to crosstalk, but I had a guy who was transferring a lot of his anger out to me about his wife. And I was like, dude, I can't sponsor you. You've got too many issues against women, and I don't want to be the target. And he calls me. Like, he calls me. But I'm not sponsoring him anymore. But he will be like, can we do a ton of stuff together? Okay, whatever. Because he likes my advice, but for me, it's not safe. It's just not safe. Because, again, I don't want somebody's anger at me that has nothing to do with me. If you're mad at me about me, cool, we can talk about it. But if you're mad at me because you're having an issue with your wife, that's never worked for me. So my sponsor has now said to me, I really think for now you should probably not be working with men. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. And then I can use that when somebody says to me, a guy, you know, will come up to me and say, can you sponsor? I'm like, my sponsor tells me I'm not supposed to do that right now, you know. So I have plausible deniability on that. So my sponsees, I don't tell them what to do. I have sponsees who call me every day. I have two sponsees who email me every day because their self-esteem is kind of in the toilet, literally. So I say to them, I want you to find five things you did well today. And they can't be the same five things every day. And they email me five things they've done well. They've asked me to food sponsor them. I used to not be able to food sponsor because I would compare my food. Now I'm like, sure. I don't even look at their food. I care less about what they're eating. I want to know, are they working their stuff? Are they working their program? Because the food, I know this sounds crazy to people who are in the food right now, the food takes care of itself. It just does. And what I do with my sponsor, I call her a few times a week. I don't call her every day. I am working a 9-step again. And for the first time, I'm on it. And my sponsor came up with the best solution. So I had this financial amends that I thought I needed to make with a director of a camp when I was 15. I feel like I fucked up. And I wanted to send her money every month because I can afford to pay it all off. And she's like, why would you owe her any money? But okay. So I said, all right. So she says, go see if you can find a camp to give money to. I went online, I went to a camp in Wisconsin, I found a camp in Wisconsin for parents of children with cancer. And I'm sending them $20 a month. And I'm like, this is like the best 9-step ever, you know? Like, I'm so excited about this. And so, like, it doesn't have to be horrible. It doesn't have to be horrible. Like, we can come up with really creative solutions. You know, if you listen to our sponsors, if it's left to my devices, I'm like, oh, I have to write up that shit. It's going to suck. And she's like, no, it's not supposed to be like that. It's not supposed to be like that at all. These steps are not to beat you up. When we do a 4-step inventory, and the sponsor says to me, you worked in a restaurant. You know what it is to go on a walk in and take inventory. It's not about, oh, my God, we're out of peppers. What are we going to do? You know, it's like, no, we need peppers. You know, just get the inventory down. What are the patterns? Where do we have too much? Where do we have too little? It's an inventory. It's not a beat-up thing. So if I can see these steps as really a way to improve my life, not to beat myself up anymore, and then I have somebody who's gone there before me, and if she doesn't have experience right enough, she'll send me to somebody else. I love that. And if I don't have experience strength and hope, please call this other person. I've heard them share. Please call them, because I think they might have some words of wisdom for you that I don't have. Because a sponsor, you know, I had one sponsor that I'm not with anymore. She had a term for us. I think she called us her babies or whatever the hell she called us. And, you know, I liked her recovery, but I couldn't stand being called that. Because I was like, I'm not her kid. She's as sick as I am. You know, like, even though I'm 28 years, it was so funny. Somebody said to me the other day, she goes, you were in our group chat the other day. And I said, really? What was going on? And so she goes, we all said, even Ray when we had the date at the time. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not here to go, I'm so recovered, because I'm not. I'm as sick as anybody else in these rooms. I just have time to know that when I'm in something, it'll pass. Or I know who to call, or I know what step to take. That's all I know. But as far as having a disease, big time, big time. It hasn't gone away from me. Probably will never go away from me. It'll keep me in these rooms, which is fantastic. But That sponsor, as great as she was, I couldn't stand it because I couldn't stand not being on the same level as her. Because since there are no gurus in this program. Now, for anybody who calls their sponsors babies, that's fine. Like, that's totally cool. Like, again, I have no judgment about it, but for me, it, like, every time I heard her say it, I didn't have a meeting for my babies, and I was just like, okay, no. So, and I didn't go to the meeting because I couldn't do it. Like, I just, it was a wording thing. You're a bad match. You're a bad match. But if somebody is looking for somebody who really is nurturing in a mom way, she's perfect. She's perfect. Not for me. And so that's the other great thing about sponsorship is I am never stuck with a sponsor. Ever. The sponsor I'm with now, I've been with forever. I love her. And I hope to stay with her because she knows me so well. But honestly, if in the next week I was like, wow, this is not really working so well, we would talk about it. And then I'd be like, okay, time to move on. Time to move on. I never want to be without a sponsor. I'll tell you that. That's terrifying to me. And the few times that I've been without a sponsor, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. I really need somebody who I can depend on, who I trust the recovery, because it's not that they know more, but they can step back in a way that I can't. I'm too close to the problem. And they're closer to the solution. And so I need somebody who's really close to the solution when I'm in the problem. So that's kind of, for me, that's what sponsorship is somebody who can go, oh, I can see this because I'm, is that two?
2 minutes.
Okay, great. I'm standing away from you, so I have a better perspective than you do because you're like this with it. So my perspective is that I can see where you are and I can say to you, you're the first step on this. You're completely powerless over this situation. And you need to do some first step work. And I go, okay. And I go, oh, I've been through this stuff so many times. I'm not doing it first step again. I've never said that to a sponsor. When my sponsor says to do something, I do it. I do not argue. Because what's the point? So I'm going to argue with her. It's a waste of time. It's just a waste of time. And she'll get off the phone with me anyway. Like she'll hang up. There was one point I was so frustrated about this delivery. And I remember screaming, you don't understand. And she's like, okay, so I'm hanging up now. And I was like, wait, no, no. And she said, I'm hanging up now. And when you're ready to call me back and speak to me civilly, we can talk. Click. Boy, did I change really fast. Called her, I apologized. Said it had nothing to do with me. She goes, I know it had nothing to do with me, but I'm not going to listen to it. Okay. So she's really good at setting boundaries, and I've learned how to be better at setting boundaries with my sponsees, with myself, with the people around me. Sponsorship is, it's free. Like, it's free, you know? We give of ourselves, and we receive. And it's such a beautiful thing to be able to do that because my life, I was raised, if I do this for you, you better do that for me. And if I don't get something back, we're done, or I'm going to have a huge resentment. And now, I like, oh, I don't care. I spent a year with somebody on a fourth step. A year. That was a lot of time out of my life. But you know what? It was really helpful for both of us. Fun. She offered to, like, buy me a drink. I was like, no, you don't owe me anything. This works for me. We're told that sponsorships cost us. And so I'm grateful to have a sponsor, and I'm grateful to be sponsored, and I hope you all have fabulous sponsors and sponsees. Thank you so much.
How would you like your time?
Same as her, just 2 minutes at the end.
Okay, yeah.
Thank you both for sharing. You just did a wonderful job. I got a lot out of it. My name is Helen. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Helen.
And this September, I will have been in Overeaters Anonymous 40 years.
Wow.
Came in the late 70s. So, of course, I was young, and my sponsor was like a mother to me, you know. And one of my first lessons was just in just listening to the respect she had for her own children. I'd hear little, okay, honey. And I don't think I had ever been called honey in my life. Or sweetie, or, you know, I'm so big, I looked like an adult when I was 6. So, I mean, just those little terms of endearment were just so sweet. And just the level of respect just taught me a lot about service and parenting, and she, you know, she could see many things that were not normal in the life of a young woman because she'd been down that road before. You know, I was living at home. I was 21. I was supporting a mother and a younger brother. And she said, like, when are you going to get out? And I said, I can't. My mother needs me. You know, and so there was this whole long, I have a long history of drama, picking men that are rehabilitation jobs, doing things for people that they could do for themselves. I used to have a sponsor, because I have a lot of experience in dating. I've been married 3 times. And she used to say, if it's not there up front, I'm not digging for it. In other words, if that, you know, because I think, well, underneath it all, he's, you know. And she'd say, no, honey, if it's not there where you can see it, you know, it's not an expedition. It needs to be there, you know, right up front. And it took me many years to learn that. The reason the Big Book was written wasn't to help get people sober in 1935. It says the reason this book is written is to help you find a power greater than yourselves that will solve your problem. And that's what we in Overeaters Anonymous believe about the food, just like these ladies said. If you work the steps, it takes care of itself. So also when people send me food, I just think, okay, whatever. That's good if you can stick to it, because I come up from a long history of dieting. So when somebody calls me in the morning and says, okay, now from now on I'm gluten-free or whatever, I'm never having this again, and I go, how do you propose you will do that? Just by saying it? It's like fairy dust, you know? The way you're going to do it is you will be less restless, irritable, and discontent because you will be working the steps. That is how it works. Like in the chapter, How It Works, it doesn't talk a lot about you're going to have to quit drinking. It talks about all the things that drive that obsession. And so I tell people, and people don't want to hear it, we all come from a long history of dieting. I was 100 pounds overweight. I lost 100 and I gained every piece of it back. And you think that I'd learned. The only thing I don't have experience with is bulimia or anorexia. But I was, I guess what they would call today an exercise bulimic, you know, ridiculous amounts of exercise and ridiculous low-calorie intake. And in the beginning, you know, we all worked the steps out of the Big Book. And even though Overeaters Anonymous claimed to be a spiritual program, in essence, they handed you a diet when you walked through the door. Like, this is all about God, here's your diet, you know? And it was 3 meals a day with nothing in between, and I just couldn't stick to that. And I had a lot of shame and guilt about that. And I want to say that I wasn't just a visitor. I say there's 2 types of people in Overeaters Anonymous. There are members. And if you are a member, you avail yourself to all the membership benefits, just like a health club. And one of the membership benefits is a sponsor and meetings and writing. And if you're a visitor, you just can't come and you say things like, I don't like that meeting. It didn't give me what I want. Well, it'll give you what you want if you go there and say it, right? I mean, it's all about giving back. You know, it's just what we're doing for other people, you know, and sponsorship is definitely one of those things. I think it was very difficult to sponsor, and I think people that are overly dramatic and can't stop talking are very difficult to sponsor. If you look at my report card, the first one of the semester says, Helen is talking too much. And then the second one says, Helen is still talking. Hey, that's going to be a hard person to sponsor. That's a hard child to raise. It's hard, you know. And I don't know if those kids can do a lot about that, you know. And I would have a sponsor who'd probably set a little timer. And then she'd say, excuse me, would you like to hear what I have to say about that? And how could you say no? But there'd be a time limit I could ramble on and on like that. And she set really good boundaries, which taught me how to set really good boundaries, too. And then I would have to hear what she had to say about that. And a lot of times, I remember one time I said, Well, this is, it's not fair. I forget it, what it was. And she said, the fair is in Pomona. And another time, I can tell you what my first spiritual awakening was, because it was the first time in my life I had taken the direction that was contrary. You know, sponsors told me things like, Helen, just because you're thinking something doesn't mean you have to say it. Oh, really? Thought I had to say it, you know. Well, there was this thing, you know, I was a nurse. I worked the night shift in a critical care unit. And they had let go of some of the housekeepers, and they told the nurses would be emptying the trash cans. And I called my sponsor, and I go, well, I don't think that's right. I didn't go to school to empty trash cans, and they need to do this, and they need to do that. And she said, Helen, wouldn't it just be easier to empty the trash can? Wouldn't it? But I didn't want what was easy. I wanted what was fair and right and what I deserved. And it was a sponsor that told me, Helen, not everything has your name on it. Not every job has your name on it. Not every experience. Not every man is meant to be. Well, he's perfect. Well, if he was perfect, you'd have him, you know. God knows what you need, you know. There was one time I was sponsored by this lady for 5 years, and we have a little meditation book, and I would call her every morning at a given time, and I'd read that meditation book, and there's September 6th says, I had such hopes. What happened? It is the end. What happened was that God had other plans for me. If I cling to what I think I wanted, I will refuse to look at what's opening up before me. And that was the story of my life. I knew what I wanted. I knew what was perfect. I knew what weight I should be. I knew what my diet should look like. Really, I know nothing. And that's why I don't tell people really what to eat. If I knew what to eat, would I have ever been 100 pounds overweight? And the diet that I thought was a perfect diet 20 years ago isn't so perfect today, because we constantly are changing our perceptions about what food is going to work for us. So how do I know what food is going to work for your schedule, what food is going to work for your body? I don't. Some people hate to cook, and they just refuse to do it. I'm not going to change that habit in them. I personally think cooking makes you mindful, and you know exactly what's in that preparation. I think it's a wonderful idea, but can I get somebody who's never cooked to do it? For me, it has changed everything. You know, I also have a very small refrigerator. You know how people have these jumbo things you could put like a whole supermarket in there? Because I know what's in there. I know the vegetables. I eat what's in there. I never throw vegetables out. I eat them now. You could open my refrigerator and see all sorts of fruits and vegetables in there. I eat real food. I haven't had a lean cuisine in 7 years. I haven't had fast food of any sort in 7 years. I've been abstaining for 17 years. And I'll tell you why I think I have not been abstaining for 40 years. This is just my opinion of my own absence. I would hang on to some food plan that I thought was the perfect one, and then I would be on it perfectly, and I would be losing weight. And nothing is more exhilarating than losing weight. You're getting compliments. You're getting your new jeans on. taking selfies, you know. And then all of a sudden you eat some innocuous thing, like maybe a graham cracker, and you, I've screwed up now. There's no point. I might as well just binge until I drop. And that cycle was going on over and over again. And now I eat just about everything. There's only two things that I haven't had in 17 years. One is a Reese's peanut butter cup. Wouldn't be a good idea. Mm-hmm. And the other one is a donut. I've probably had just about everything else, but I haven't had a binge. And in what I think about my own abstinence is the reason I binged is because I dieted. At the end of every diet, there is an equal and opposite binge. It is only a matter of time as to when it's coming. It will always come. Just a matter of time. And my experience has proven that to me, because I did that for the first 9 years in this program, you know, try to hang on to some unrealistic concept, and when it wasn't just perfect, I would just binge until I drop. I also, because they didn't have any of the literature that they have now, they only had the big book. I do, with my sponsorees, the big book style. And the big book actually takes you through the first, second, and third step. It talks about the concept of powerlessness. And right before you launch into the fourth step, it has this little caveat. Our problems, we think, are of our own making. So if I sponsor you, I'm going to hit hard on that. Not to blame you, and just because you cause your own problems doesn't make them hurt any less. They're still very painful, and I understand that. But at the core of all our problems, we have a part. And if you can't see that in your inventory, then you're probably not doing it the way I would have you do it. Because at the end, and I used to say to my sponsor, when are they going to find out where they're at fault? How come these things always end with the sentence, where am I at fault? That doesn't seem right, because these other people are idiots. And she said, would it help you if I agreed that they were idiots? Okay. Next. You know, I mean, why do you keep inviting idiots into your life? You know, what? You know, I mean, a sponsor that you work with a long time can see patterns in you, you know. And they can say, well, that just sounds like that thing you had with that last boss. What? Why did you bring that up, you know? What do you think God is trying to tell you here? Why do you think you keep going through this? Oh, you just do not want to hear stuff like that, right? Can we talk about what I ate today? That would be so much easier. You know, I remember I did this 10-step on Kelly's dad. I have a daughter that's 20, and in this 10-step, you know, not to say that he's a rehabilitation project at all. He was self-supporting through his own contributions. He did not have a problem with drugs and alcohol. But I definitely had more than my fair share of what I call family responsibilities and, you know, finances, just overall household responsibilities. And, you know, I had this concept of if you're in a role, you should stick to it. So if you're a man, you better fix things, okay? So I was calling her saying, this is undone and that's undone and he didn't fix this and he's not taking care of this. And I said to her, you know what I'd like? When? And I'm crying all dramatic. I would like a man to take care of me. When am I going to get that? I see other women being taken care of. And she said, well, there's a problem here. You can't be a ball buster and be taken care of at the same time. You have to make a decision. And it's like, ah, you know. And there's one sponsor I call now where if I complain about work, you know, she'll say, well, wait a minute, is this your company? Like, do you own this company? Is this your business? Oh, so you're an employee. Oh, okay. So let me just tell you the role of an employee. They designate what it is your job description is, and then you do it, and they get to decide how well you've done it. Oh, really? Because I want to run the company from my little place back here. But I'm so selfish and self-seeking, I want the security of that paycheck. Well, if you own your own business, you don't have that security. But I want it both ways, you know. I want the security of your job paying me every week the same amount, and then I want to tell you how to run your company. See, if you have a sponsor, they point out all these little things. If they're doing their job. But that's so unpopular, you know. And, you know, we live in a society where even the losing soccer team gets a trophy. We all want to be winners. We don't want anybody to hurt our self-esteem. We want to feel good about ourselves. Sometimes your sponsor doesn't make you feel good about yourself, you know. If they're constantly saying, well, maybe you want to look at this, that doesn't feel good to think that you're need help or you need to change in some small way, you know. And that's what all my sponsors have done. They have said, you know, just like Nancy said, well, where is God in all this? You know, in this whole thing you wrote, I didn't hear anything about God. And you know that last little part that says, where am I at fault? My sponsors have always pointed out that one of the big places I'm at fault is I do not trust God to take care of it. So I need to get in there and meddle and fix and kvetch and complain, you know, and manipulate and control because I'm not trusting. And a lot of times I could just literally sit back and do nothing. And one of the things that I've learned to do, particularly in the workplace, is if they ask me to do something that I don't think, is in my job description, I'll go, I can do that. And when your behavior changes first, then your attitude changes. And I always used to think my attitude had to change. And my sponsor said, no, you can just pretend. That's okay. You can pretend to like your boss. You can pretend to like your job and your coworkers. You could put a smile on your face and you could say, yes, I can do that. And then think about it later. And boy, that has been so helpful. Because I can think anything I want. You know, I can write a 10th step. And the 10th step for me is kind of like the 4th step of Ben. You know, how does it affect my security, self-esteem, personal relationships, and ambitions? You know, and where have I been selfish, self-seeking, fearful? Fear is a big thing that drives many of us, you know, and dishonest. Sometimes I have dishonest motives. Sometimes I'm in relationships for all the wrong reasons. I'm there to take and not give. And when I have people write in that same way, they see the same patterns in themselves, hopefully, that I saw in mine. I want to talk a little bit about food and just some of the things that I tell my sponsorees. If somebody calls me and says, I ate this or that, I go, really? Where did you find that? Like sometimes it's at work and you really can't complain. You know, I sponsored one gal, if you can imagine this. There was an M&M dispenser on the wall, like a soap dispenser, and she'd hear people hitting that and the little M&Ms running out. I was like, oh my God, how could I bust that thing up with a baseball bat? You know, and I've had a lot of people that have had trail mix and bowls and stuff like that. And when you walk into a dangerous place, one of the things that really helps me is to pause, be very mindful that I'm walking into a landmine, and take the second step. You know, I came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. Every time I've done that, I've never eaten whatever it was. Another thing that we do, myself and my sponsorees, let's say I walk in and all of a sudden there's, like the other day, 100 brownie bites all there. And I take a little sticky and I put OPF on it and then I photograph it. Now it takes a few seconds to do that. And then it kind of breaks the spell of should I eat it? Then OPF stands for other people's food. That label stays on there the whole time. And then other people go, oh, yeah, what does that mean? Sometimes I tell them that's other people's food, and they go, oh, no, you can have it. If you only knew. Yeah. So my, everybody helps me out. The people at work, everybody is aware that I have this disease because I have no shame. You know why? I didn't cause it, and I can't cure it. This is just a malady like, any other disease. And it's just as much a part of me as my blue eyes. So I don't make any excuses for the life I have to live and the things I have to do. Anyway, thank you so much.
Still a minute.
Oh, I still have a minute? Okay. If we claim that we are bodily and mentally different than our fellows, we need to behave like it. And so many of us don't. We do things like, buy lunch at the gas station, Well, I went in there and I saw that. Well, you know what I do at the gas station? I only pump gas. So it's not only about food, and we look so much at food. I look at behaviors, too. I'm never going to go to a 99-cent store. There's nothing I need to save money on in there that is worth all the things that I'm going to see in there. It's just, and I only buy food that I eat in grocery stores, not at fast food stores, not at gas stations, and not at the checkout at Lowe's, because when you go to Lowe's, you should come out with a screwdriver. Not a candy bar. So sometimes we look so often at food, and we neglect all the behaviors and all the social cues and all the things that are there. And I know every day I have a disease that will kill me because it almost did. And so I act like it. I call several people a day. And I pray every day, and I take the second step, and for the most part, I've been restored to sanity. So thank you.